Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, where you hear about the business of the casino entertainment industry from the people who make it happen. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of GGB, and this week we feature a discussion with Jonadev Chaudhuri, who was recently confirmed by the U.S. Senate as the chairman of the National Indian Gaming Commission. After two nomination hearings, Jonadev Chaudhuri was finally approved by the Senate to become the chairman of the National Indian Gaming Commission. He has served on the commission for well over a year, but some procedural issues delayed his appointment as chairman. Now on the hot seat, Chaudhuri has been campaigning on the effectiveness of the NIGC under the Obama administration, despite fewer notices of violations. He says the agency's focus on training has reduced those kinds of incidents. He spoke with me at the annual Indian Gaming Trade Show in San Diego in early April. Jonadev Chaudhuri, thanks for joining us on the Global Gaming Business Podcast. It's great to see you here in San Diego at the NIGA conference. And I understand your confirmation hearing was held last week. How do you think it went?
Well, First off, thank you so much for having me, Roger. Mm-hmm. It's really a wonderful opportunity to sit down with you and talk about what we're doing in the industry to strengthen the regulatory structure of Indian gaming. So thank you. But yes, we recently had my second nomination hearing. I felt that it went well, and I was happy with how things progressed from there. Within a week or so after the hearing, the committee moved me to the full Senate floor.
Great.
And so the Senate's in recess now, and I'm cautiously optimistic to see about seeing how things play out from here.
Great. Well, also thank you for keeping my streak alive. I've interviewed every chairman or chairwoman of the NIGC since Tony Hope back in the 90s, so we're keeping it going here.
It's incredible.
Let's talk. Go back to the beginning, really. Under IGRA, the NIGC was established to be an independent agency, totally separate from other agencies. But in the past few years, the ties to the Interior Department seem to have deepened. Explain what your relationship is with Interior today.
Well, let me first say we are an independent regulatory agency, and so we are committed to performing our independent regulatory mission, as set forth under IGRA. That said, I think it just makes sense to have as open and strong of dialogue with regulatory partners as you can have. So whether it's DOI that we work with on many issues or other agencies within the federal family, we're committed to open dialogue. Mm-hmm. By extension, that's also true with other regulatory partners in the field. Mm-hmm. Tribal regulatory partners, as well as in particular circumstances, states as well. I'm committed to doing whatever I can to strengthen our dialogue with our partners.
Okay, but in terms of your relationship with Interior, do you report to somebody in Interior, or do they kind of control what comes out of the NIGC?
No, we are an independent regulatory agency.
Okay, great.
Housed in Interior. That's how IGRA set up our agency.
Right. Okay. Great. You know, while the NIGC clearly has jurisdiction over Class 2 gaming, the role in overseeing Class 3 gaming has always been something of a gray area. What's your approach to kind of the Class 3 oversight?
Well, I'm not sure it's a gray area. IGRA is pretty specific regarding our role with Class 3 gaming, and we are committed to implementing IGRA to the best of our abilities.
Mm-hmm. Now, Phil Hogan, the former chairman, tried to really draw what he used to call a bright line between the two classifications of gaming by strictly defining certain standards of games and how they are played. Is that something that you want to see, or is that something that you're kind of backing away from at this point?
Well, I wouldn't say we're backing away from anything. We take very seriously our day-to-day responsibility of implementing IGRA. So while I absolutely respect Chairman Hogan's efforts to create a bright line regarding game classification, I also recognize that regardless of how bright that line may be under the law, and IGRA is pretty specific regarding its definitions of Class 2 and Class 3 gaming, regardless of how bright line a legal definition may be, you still always have to apply the facts of a given situation to the law.
Right.
And so while it may be helpful to think of bright lines in terms of the law, every classification that comes to the NIGC is very fact-dependent, and we review fact-dependent issues on a case-by-case basis.
So tell us how you look at certain machines that are presented to you, is this Class 2 or Class 3? Do you have a lab? Do you send it out to a separate lab, or how does that work?
Well, we look at the specifics of various games using a variety of tools. And so different questions get teed up to us in different ways as an agency. Regardless of how games are teed up to us, our first and foremost priority is to look at the definition of Class 2, Class 3 under IGRA, and simply ask whether or not under IGRA the game, however teed up, is Class 2 or Class 3.
Okay, great. The General Accounting Office is compiling an audit of NIGC regulatory actions over the past few years. We've had some experts tell us, and we've reported that these actions will be shown to have been dramatically decreased over the past administrations. Explain why that is.
Well, let me begin by saying we absolutely recognize the great efforts that GAO has made to work with stakeholders throughout the country and at all levels of Indian gaming. They've reached out to not just federal regulators, but they've reached out to tribal regulators and state regulators. And so we definitely appreciate the efforts that GAO has taken in terms of giving a thorough look to this matter, and we certainly look forward to their report coming out. That said, I'm not sure, in terms of the way you framed your question, whether or not there will be a showing of a reduction of regulatory actions. As I've said repeatedly, we are absolutely committed to doing everything we can, both on the front end and on the back end, to achieve compliance. I think compliance with federal law. I think that's the ultimate goal of IGRA. So with that in mind, all of our efforts aimed at training and technical assistance, I would suggest, are regulatory actions. I think what you may be referring to are certain types of enforcement actions regarding closure orders or fines. But I would absolutely say every time we do a compliance review, or every time we do a training, or every time we provide technical assistance, that's regulatory activity targeted toward compliance as well. And let me share a story that I think helps illustrate this point at the risk of going a little bit long. I'm a former chess player. For better or for worse,
I played a former chess player.
Well, I peaked in high school and haven't really played much since then.
Okay.
But I was a competitive chess player in high school, and so was my brother. My brother got started before I did, and he kind of got me into it. But I played a lot in high school, and so did my brother. At one point when we were younger, there was a little local I can't even call it a publication. I think they Xeroxed newsletters and sent them around. But they did a little story on my brother and my brother's style of play. And in that story, my brother made a throwaway comment. He just, they asked him what his favorite piece was. And, thinking it was a ridiculous question, my brother, I think, said, "Well, I like knights."
Okay.
Throwaway comment, didn't think anything more of it. A few months later, my brother is playing to place in one tournament, in one of the later rounds of one tournament. And he's up against another kid who, pretty early on, starts playing in a very unorthodox fashion. All of a sudden, he sacrifices a pawn, and then he sacrifices a rook, and then ultimately he sacrifices a queen. All these sacrifices leading up to being able to capture my brother's knights. my brother demolished the guy in the game. It wasn't even close. Afterwards, my brother asked him, what was that about? What were all those sacrifices for? And the kid said, well, I read that you like knights. I read that you like knights, so I figured a good strategy against you was to just go after your knights. That's how I think of any one of the tools that we have available to us as an agency. Enforcement actions, yes, they are an important tool, and they will always be an important tool in terms of our efforts to achieving compliance. But they're only one piece in our available toolbox,
sure,
all of which helps lead us to compliance. So focusing just on one tool, whether it's enforcement actions or any other tool, is just as short-sighted as that young boy who played my brother, who did everything he could to get my brother's knights.
Right.
If the ultimate goal is compliance, you use every tool in your toolbox to get there.
Okay. And speaking of tools, you know, a lot of the criticism that tribal gaming gets is that, oh, it's not very well regulated, you know, especially when, you know, when you have anti-gaming people, and then they see the NIGC maybe not using their enforcement tools as much as possible. But, you know, the fact of the matter is the level of regulation on tribal gaming is much deeper than even commercial gaming in many respects. You have the state regulators, and then you have the tribal regulators, and then the NIGC. Explain how tribal gaming commissions play a part in this patchwork of regulatory laws.
Thank you, Roger. I think IGRA clearly contemplates tribal regulators as the primary regulators of Indian gaming. Certainly there's a role for the NIGC as the federal regulator, and given the facets of a given compact, states play a role as well. But IGRA itself recognizes tribes as the primary regulators of Indian gaming. And I think everybody involved in the industry has embraced that concept. So tribes are the primary regulators. I think they have been effective regulators. We certainly are mindful of our oversight role. But back to this idea of using every tool in your toolbox to achieve compliance when you're performing your oversight role, that's what we're about.
Mm-hmm.
One other point, just very briefly, back to the GAO.
Mm-hmm.
Our formal push towards doing what you can on the front end to avoid problems on the back end is still relatively new.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is going back just about 2010, 2011, somewhere in that range. While our ACE initiative is simply shorthand for describing our commitment to working on the front end, while our ACE initiative is still relatively new, we are confident that some very positive numbers will be coming out the more that we look at the effectiveness of working on the front end. Let me give you a good example. When you compare 2009 numbers to the period between 2011 and 2013, you actually see a 34% reduction in the comparison of high-risk issues when it comes to compliance with MIX. And overall, you see a significant reduction in terms of compliance issues with MIX. And that's just one of a number of promising details that I think will, I mean, they're in any report, and that report's not out yet,
right,
but in any report, you can't weigh in on it until it's been released.
Sure,
it hasn't been released yet, but we're confident that there, despite ACE being new, there are going to be some very positive aspects of highlighting our efforts in the industry.
So the efforts you have now for the certification.
Let me stop for a second. So the original question.
So another tool in the toolbox which you're using very effectively right now is the training and the certification of the tribes. And explain how that's improving the regulation at the tribal level.
Well, even though I'm extremely honored to be nominated for chair, I'm still relatively new to the commission. I joined in 2013. In 2013, we trained more tribal regulatory partners than as an agency we had ever trained before, historically.
Mm-hmm.
That's just a fact. And we did so at more training events
right.
than we had ever conducted
right.
in the past. That was 2013. In 2014, we bettered that.
Mm-hmm.
2014, we trained more people at more training events than we had ever trained before. And we're certainly on pace to even better that. Well, absolutely, training is something that we believe in deeply. In order to have strong regulation, you have to have a properly trained workforce,
right.
not just at NIGC, mm-hmm. but among our regulatory partners.
Right.
So training is and always will be part of what we do. And it's contemplated in IGRA that we provide training and technical assistance as well. So we see it as a fundamental pillar of our statutory mission.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, and also I believe you have some online training aspects now, correct?
Well, and that's part of our larger push towards ramping up our internal technological capacity. We recently upgraded our internal infrastructure so that in the very near future we'll be able to provide remote trainings and webinars so that folks who are unable to attend in-person trainings can still benefit from the training and technical assistance we provide.
Mm-hmm.
My hope, is that our efforts will expand even more broadly than ever before so that communities in rural areas or communities without large tribal travel budgets
mm-hmm.
can still fully participate in our back-and-forth dialogue
sure.
and training.
Okay, great. How closely does the NIGC follow the production of audits? There's been some suggestion that the lack of audits at the Chukchansi casino in California that was shut down could have been avoided if they had submitted their audits on time. And I believe they were 2 years late, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, let me speak generally and then specifically.
Okay.
Specifically, Chukchansi was absolutely an anomaly. But generally, we actively perform site visits and compliance reviews. I think last year we performed over 1,200 compliance reviews. In addition to that, we regularly receive and review independent audits by third-party auditors for each and every that cover each and every facility that conducts Indian gaming. So over 1,200 compliance reviews and somewhere around 450 audits received last year. Now, Chukchansi was an anomaly mm-hmm. within the Indian gaming industry. We acted swiftly to address it. We did everything we could to work with that community to address past issues. We did so long before any NOBs were issued. We actively worked through our compliance office to address those issues. When there became an issue regarding health and safety, we immediately issued a closure order. So Chukchansi was an anomaly. It's being addressed, and that facility, frankly, won't open until issues are addressed to the satisfaction of the agency. But generally, Indian Country takes very seriously its relationship with NIGC and the importance of submitting audits.
Okay.
Very few communities want their facilities closed.
Sure, definitely. So what kind of enforcement authority does the NIGC have over notice of violations? Are you able to go in there and, seize the books or anything like that? Or what are the levels of that, basically?
IGRA is pretty clear what our enforcement authorities are. So certainly data gathering, fact gathering, that's part of the authorities that stem from our overall enforcement authorities. But in terms of specific actions, we can issue fines, severe fines, as well as issues of temporary closure,
mm-hmm.
temporary closure orders. Under IGRA, we're a civil regulatory agency, so we don't have criminal authority,
mm-hmm.
but many times allegations or information relating to potential criminal activity is brought to us. We have an authority, is also, in my view, the responsibility to make referrals as appropriate, given the specific facts presented to us. And when we make referrals, we can refer matters to the DOJ, U.S. Attorney's Office, to the state, and we do that in terms of criminal activities. Okay. But civil enforcement authority are, our authorities are clearly set forth in IGRA, and
sure.
I believe they're significantly muscular.
Right. So in terms of who would enforce that, it would either be a federal attorney or maybe even the FBI or something like that?
Well, we can certainly issue the orders. We can, we can issue fines that mm-hmm. are binding. In terms of the actual, we don't physically put the chains on a facility ourselves. Typically, an agency such as the U.S. Marshals does that,
right.
And that usually is pursuant to a federal district court action arising from our closure order.
I see.
You
okay.
can take that closure order to the federal court, and the federal court can, I don't have any handcuffs or
yeah.
locks on me at the moment.
No, right.
But I can, there's a difference between issuing a closure order and actually getting the handcuffs, getting the locks
right.
out yourself.
I seem to remember a former commissioner, though, used to pack a .45 on his
Well,
yeah, I think he was a former.
That may be separate
too, so.
And apart
yes,
from
I think so.
his role at the
that,
agency.
Right. Now, off-reservation gaming is a really hot button issue. Typically the NRGC doesn't have a real role there. For example, when the Bay Mills tribe in Michigan opened up an off-reservation casino, the NRGC did not intervene because the casino wasn't on tribal land. So who's responsible for policing this kind of gaming then?
Well, let me just say generally, IGRA doesn't define off-reservation gaming.
Mm-hmm.
IGRA does define lands eligible for
right.
gaming. So, when we're looking at whether or not Indian lands are eligible for gaming, we look at IGRA.
Mm-hmm.
And IGRA allows for different types of lands to qualify under its definitions. Typically, the issues that are involved in the larger off-reservation gaming debate
mm-hmm.
Show themselves or are associated with the land into trust process.
Right.
As an agency, we play no role of
right.
in putting land into trust,
mm-hmm.
so our involvement is very, very minimal. In terms of lands that are already in trust, we simply look at the definitions under IGRA of eligibility
mm-hmm.
and apply them to the facts at hand.
So once an off-reservation land that is not on the reservation is taken into trust and it's used for gaming, that's when NRGC gets involved.
Well, our jurisdiction is focused on Indian gaming on Indian lands.
Right.
If matters are brought to our attention that are outside of our jurisdiction, we work very closely in a referral capacity
mm-hmm.
to address those issues, but they're not necessarily within our lane under IGRA. So you brought up Bay Mills. With Bay Mills, we actively, once a determination was made or once an assessment was made that the activities were not occurring on Indian lands, we actively referred the matter to the state,
okay.
to the Department of Justice, and the U.S. Attorney's Office. And from even after that,
mm-hmm.
given the litigation that ultimately ensued, we actively worked with DOJ to produce an amicus brief to the United States Supreme Court supporting tribal sovereign immunity.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody knew how the U.S. Supreme Court would come down
right.
On its ultimate decision, but I'm personally very proud of the agency's role in working with DOJ to submit that brief supporting tribal sovereign immunity and ultimately not going outside of our lane and doing what we could to refer appropriate matters consistent with the tenets of IGRA.
Mm-hmm.
And we did that.
Okay. another hot-button issue that the NAGC has been following anyway is iGaming. We've had a lot of tribes that, you know, want to get into iGaming, whereas there's another section of tribes that don't want it at all. So that's a fine line to walk. How do you handle that?
I don't know if it's a fine line. IGRA says what it says,
right,
and we apply the law. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of the discussions around internet gaming involve potential legislative plans. We are not legislators. Mm-hmm. We're an administrative agency, and we perform our statutory mission as an agency. However, we don't weigh in on potential legislation unless asked by legislators. Mm-hmm. And so we are always available to Congress to provide our position or our opinions. Mm-hmm. And we will do that when asked. Mm-hmm. But absent legislative changes, we work with the language of IGRA,
sure,
as it's written, and we simply ask, you know, whether or not certain gaming on Indian lands complies with the requirements of IGRA. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's a fine line for us to walk,
okay,
by any means.
So do you think the NIGC is capable of regulating iGaming on Indian lands? Should there be a bill that allows that, or should there be a tribe that tries it out and makes all the hurdles, judicial hurdles anyway?
Again, with the caveat of not weighing in on legislation unless appropriately asked, mm-hmm, by Congress, I will say generally that the staff that we have at NIGC has in-house some of the most committed, dedicated, knowledgeable gaming experts around. I'm fully confident that we are capable of dealing with any challenge, any role that's thrown at us, as we've done with the regulatory mandates of IGRA.
Mm-hmm.
I've been very, very impressed with our team's ability to implement IGRA. We are the only agency within the federal government that regulates gaming of any kind.
Mm-hmm.
And with that comes specialized knowledge, specialized expertise, and specialized perspective that our team absolutely has. But I'm not going to be advocating for one bill or the other unless asked for an opinion by Congress.
Okay, great. Now, having interviewed, you know, so many chairmen of this agency, I understand it's also funded in kind of a unique way in terms of assessments on tribal gaming. I know you just recently issued your most recent funding formula. How has that been received in Indian country?
So far, very well.
Mm-hmm.
For the last 2 years, we've dropped our fee rate,
mm-hmm,
which is, I believe, a testament to our commitment to efficiency and effectiveness.
Sure.
And so while I don't, I'll never say that the fee rate will go in one direction or the other in the future. You,
mm-hmm,
can't tell the future.
Sure.
Every fee rate is set based on the specific realities of the industry.
Right.
We are very proud of our role, and I work very closely with fellow Commissioner Dan Little,
mm-hmm,
to assess our ability to perform our statutory functions. We're very proud of our role in being responsible stewards of tribal resources. And so the fees were reduced this year for the second time, and we'll continue to take a strong look at whether or not the fees are rationally tied to our ability to perform our mission.
Okay. Well, you know, you're just about ready to be confirmed, hopefully, knock on wood. What do you hope to accomplish during your term?
Well, when it's all said and done, I want to be able to look in the mirror and just know that I did everything I could to do my part to assist the agency with performing its mission under IGRA. So that may sound like a very sterile response, but it's actually very exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And that creates a burden on me and all of our leadership team to honestly ask ourselves, are we doing everything we can to make sure our technological capabilities are such that we can keep up mm-hmm. with the changes in the industry?
Right.
Are we doing everything we can?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, based on some of the consultation feedback we received last year, we recognized that no, we could be doing more.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're developing a technology division. We're even putting more resources into flexibility regarding technological capacity. It requires us to look at, are we doing everything we can to tweak our regulations so that we hit the sweet spot between sound regulation and not creating unnecessary or artificial roadblocks to the tribal entrepreneurial mm-hmm. spirit. It requires us to take an honest look at our in-house infrastructure and resources
mm-hmm.
and ask ourselves, are we doing everything we mm-hmm. can to have the IT platforms in place to do what we need to do? But beyond that, are we doing everything we can to attract and retain the right people as an agency? So I want to be able to look back when all is said and done and say, well, you know, you got to address the landscape as you find it.
Mm-hmm.
Given the landscape that you found when you started, did you do everything you could to make sure your agency fulfilled its mission? All I want to do is say, yes, we did everything we could.
Well, congratulations on the confirmation getting into the Senate, and at least, and we're anxiously awaiting the full Senate approval, and we're sure that's going to be forthcoming, and looking forward to your term on the commission here.
Thank you so much, Roger, and thank you for this opportunity to sit down with you.
Thanks for joining us on the GGB podcast. If you want to read more about this issue or any issue in the gaming industry, read our magazine, GGB Magazine, or visit ggbmagazine.com. For weekly updates on the gaming industry, subscribe to GGB News. For more information, visit ggbnews.com. I hope you enjoyed the interview, and we'll see you next week on the Global Gaming Business Podcast.